The Syrian city of Raqqa remains a focal point in the fight against ISIS. In recent weeks, Syrian Democratic Forces, led by a U.S. coalition, have seized parts of the city. And in that coalition, Kurdish female fighters, the so-called Women's Protection Units, have been fighting alongside Kurdish men in the region for years. They're also known by the acronym YPJ. The Western media holds them up as a heroic symbol. You've probably seen recent pictures of them in uniforms, holding heavy weaponry, fighting against the idea that they are a vulnerable group within a vulnerable group, women within the embattled, disjointed Kurdish minority, which is spread across Turkey, Iraq, Syria, Iran, and Armenia. Amy Austin Holmes is a professor at American University in Cairo. She spent time with the Kurdish female fighters. She joins us by Skype. Professor Amy, welcome.
Thank you.
And you've met with these women, these Kurdish fighters, hoisting the same weapons as men. I mean, when I say they don't seem vulnerable, they don't.
Well, that's right. They fight alongside their male companions on the front lines. And you mentioned that they are now actually very active in the liberation of Raqqa. They also played an important role in the liberation of Tal Abyad, which is also in northern Syria. This was in June 2015. If you remember when the sort of Syrian civil war began and the forces of the Assad regime withdrew from northern Syria, the Kurdish region was sort of divided into three cantons in the north. But they were not connected. And so the Battle of Tal Abyad was very crucial in linking and sort of creating a larger Kurdish entity. And women also played a very important role in that battle. And according to, you know, people I spoke to at the time within the YPG, which is the men's units, and the YPJ, five of the seven frontline commanders around Tal Abyad were actually women.
Tell us more about that. They have told you and others, we are completely equal, complete equity here. Is that true?
Well, they aspire to equality, and they, I spent some time in Kobani in northern Syria and also in Sinjar, which is a disputed territory on the Iraqi side of the border. And I spent some time there living with them, and they actually do in their everyday lives attempt to uphold the notion of equality, not just as an idea or an ideology, but also in their everyday lives. So you have the women commanders who are in charge of the women's units, and then you have male commanders that are in charge of the male units. And then when they sort of fight together in combat, you also have women acting as commanders over, you know, mixed forces, basically. So it is something that they don't just preach, but they actually in their everyday lives, to a large extent, seem to practice.
Well, you spoke to some women who told you that they were fighting not just against the Islamic State, but also against patriarchal norms of their own culture.
That's right. I mean, so I conducted a survey of around 150 combatants, both men and women. Many of the women, you know, when you would ask them why they joined, they would sometimes tell you, well, it was because of the Islamic State taking over parts of Iraq and Syria, and so they were fighting to defend their homelands. At other times, they would also very openly say that they joined the militias in order to escape an arranged marriage or in order to, you know, avoid, you know, their own, you know, what they described as their own patriarchal culture, which often, you know, expected that women would marry at a relatively young age. Mm. You know, one of the women, for example, I interviewed was a Kurdish woman from Iran, and she actually knew very little about the ideology of the militias before she joined. And she said very clearly it was really about getting away from a marriage that her brother had sort of arranged for her.
Well, you said something interesting there. You spoke to a Kurdish woman from Iran fighting in a unit from Iran, and there are Kurdish units from Iraq and from Syria and from Turkey. Are they all pretty much the same?
One of the fascinating things is that you have this diversity amongst the women. So people are recruited from all four parts of Kurdistan. So from Turkey in the north, Iraq, Syria, Iran. You also have some Kurdish women and Yazidi women from the diaspora. There's also diversity in terms of their education level. So some women had studied, you know, at universities, they have university degrees. other women that I interviewed had never set foot inside of a school a day in their life. So there's actually quite a remarkable diversity in that sense.
We're also reading reports that the role of the Kurdish fighters is so much more heightened in the fight against ISIS, because we're reading reports that ISIS fighters are deathly afraid of being killed by a female warrior, because that means that their way to paradise is blocked, and that these Kurdish female fighters are well aware of that and try to remind ISIS that they are women at every turn, singing at them through loudspeakers, for instance, in some reports across a battlefield. But these Kurdish women must also be well aware of the danger they're in because of, you know, the atrocities that the Islamic State has carried out against women. Did they seem at all aware of the situation that they might be in?
Well, yes. I mean, you have to keep in mind that in some battlefields, there's been like house-to-house fighting. So you have, you know, ISIS fighters on one side of the street and Kurdish fighters or Syrian Democratic Forces on the other side of the street. So in some cases, they are very much in close range. So they don't even need to sing to them or sort of, you know, announce from loudspeakers, because they can actually see them in front of them. And this is something that I think is important to keep in mind, because, you know, it's one thing to carry out an airstrike from, you know, thousands of feet above the ground. And then it's another thing to be sort of literally across the street from Islamic State fighters. So, you know, some of the women I interviewed had been part of the militias for many years. Some of the women I spoke to joined well before the rise of the Islamic State. They joined, you know, 5-10 years ago. Other women just joined more recently. You know, some women are very anxious also to fight on the front lines. They're very motivated to go to battle. Others more are, you know, involved in other types of planning or activities that are not necessarily on the front lines. But you see, of course, I mean, there's different levels. It shouldn't be, you know, romanticized or glorified. I mean, this is a war at the end of the day, and it is people are dying. And for them, in some ways, the decision to join a militia or to take up weapons, you know, it could be something where they feel they don't even have a choice, because they feel their government did not protect them. And so they have no choice but to take up arms themselves.
Reuters talks of interviewing Iranian Kurdish women, a unit, and they talk about knowing how in danger they are because of ISIS's brutality. And one woman is holding a Kalashnikov round in her hand, and she says, "We always have a bullet ready to use on ourselves in case we are about to be taken prisoner." You know, very dramatic. But you point out in an article in the Washington Post that the Western media's painted sort of an unrealistic picture of these Kurdish female fighters. Why? What do you mean?
Well, I just think that there's a there has been, especially early on when these sort of women fighters were first discovered, there was a lot of reporting that just focused on the fact that these are young, unmarried Kurdish women toting Kalashnikovs. But beyond that, we didn't really know much about them. You know, we didn't know, where are they from? Why did they join? You know, what do they believe in themselves? What are they fighting for? And that's what, you know, my motivation was to begin this research project, to try to understand that and to basically gather, you know, very basic demographic information about the women. And, you know, methodologically speaking, the Kurdish militants, the Kurdish fighters, they constitute a hidden population in the sense that they are literally hidden. So you can't find them very easily. They don't have cell phones, most of them. Most of them don't use email. They're, you know, in the mountains somewhere fighting. You know, just getting to them, getting access to them is not that easy. And then getting more information about where they're from and their motivations for joining is quite challenging.
That's Amy Austin Holmes, professor at American University in Cairo. Professor Amy, thank you so much.
Thank you.